Okay, good afternoon, everyone. We're going to get started. Last time we started talking about parallel computers, and today we're going to finish that up and hopefully get into the next topic. Just a few announcements before we do that. Homework 5 is out. I posted it on Thursday, I think. It's due Wednesday, a week from Wednesday, which is Wednesday, April 28th. And the same right before class. Our final is going to be on May 12 at noon. I think it's here. And I will try to have a sample final by Wednesday. I promise to have it by the end of this week. So I'll send that out and maybe an email. And then you can take a look at that, and then we'll have a few review sessions. I would like to have a review session between the last lecture and the final. And so I set up a poll online, and you can vote. Please cross off all the dates that you can make it. So every day is every day between May 4th and May 11th, so a week. And there's different parts of the day when you would be available. It's morning, afternoon, or evening. And so please, you know, check all the you know, times that you'll be available and willing to come. And I think those are all the announcements, unless there's more questions or comments. I'm assuming nobody has questions about homework 5 yet, or maybe.
This is the exam's going to be here.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a website, finalexams.rutgers.edu, I think. You can just check it there, too. They're not mentioning any classroom, so I'm assuming it's here. All right? So we're just going to dive into parallel computers. And last time we talked about how, you know, processors are getting smaller and smaller and faster, but they're going to be limited. This growth is going to be limited by the speed of light, because light can only travel about a foot per second. And so, you know, even though light travels so fast, you know, when things become really small, it matters in terms of speed. And so they're almost reaching that speed. And the only way to speed up things is to give the same task to a whole bunch of computers, and so they can all do work at the same time, and so speed things up. And so we talked about, you know, painting a fence, and how, you know, if you have a task like painting a fence, you could divide it into subtasks, like, you know, opening the paint cans, preparing the surfaces, applying the paint, and cleaning the brushes. And so, you know, one way of doing this is to have a group of people do the first task, which is opening the cans, a group of people who will prepare the surfaces, a group of people who will apply the paint, and a group of people who clean the brushes. And so this is a good approach. We can have more people. This is not a test for people who come late. So we can have more people working on the slowest task. But still, this might get stuck at some point, right? The fastest people can get stuck waiting for the slowest people. And so it's not the most efficient way of using, and this is not how, you know, parallel computers are used today. They're used in more like giving the same task, instead of dividing the task, giving the same task to every single person. And they all do it, you know, each person is assigned a part of the fence, so part of the data. And so the first one that we talked about before, it's called instruction parallelism. So you have different people doing different tasks. This one is data parallelism, which is different people work on different parts of the data. And so this is what Google uses and what all, this is how the parallel computers work. And so we did this in class last time. I asked you how many people, raise your hand if your phone number has two or more fives in it. And so instead of, you know, going over and asking each person and doing that for 80 or 70 people, however many people are in class, you raise your hand and I just counted, and it was very fast. And so we saw how fast that can go if there's a parallel computer. So basically you're all, each one of you was kind of like a processor, and your data was your phone number, and you worked on your data, and you answered instantly. And so I was just counting the number of hands that were up. So it's almost instant. And you can see this in people looking at an image. If you look at a picture, you're able to answer a question about the, you know, is there a face in the picture? Very fast. You know, brains work like this. It seems like they work in a very parallel way. And so it's not like, you know, a computer would go pixel, pixel over, take the first row of pixels, is there pink in it, you know? And so this is how, the brain has been a big inspiration in this kind of computation. And so here's, so the way, this is comparing, a sequential approach, so, going element by element with a parallel approach. And so the way you would do it here would be, you would get a list of L numbers. Actually, the list is L. You have a bunch of numbers, which is probably N. And you loop, you go through the list, you take each item, basically, in the list, and you see if it has two or three fives in it. So the list of phone numbers that you guys, all your phone numbers. And so it would take big O of N, right, for me to count how many people have five, two or more fives, right? So, so first person have two or more fives, second person have two or more fives, these 80th person have two or more fives in the firm. If I do this in parallel, you're, 80 processors, and I'm saying 80 because that's how many people are in the class. I'm assuming it's like 50 in class right now. But, every person is a processor, and they're working on their phone numbers. And then I collect the results. And it's basically big O of log N if you do the whole math, but it's almost instant. It's essentially a constant, because I just have to count however many people there are. So it's very fast. So in Scratch, I don't know how well you can see this. I actually have a script to show you. So we have a whole bunch of cats, and the cat can either be yellow and look towards the that side, or green towards that side. And so the problem is, how many green cats are there? And so I can do a sequential approach, which is, so the costume one is yellow, costume two is green, and so this is basically, this is a sequential approach. So if I press a key S, for example, from sequential, I set green count to zero, so green count will be how many green cats are there. Item will help me go through the list, and so I repeat length of cat costumes, which is how many cats there are. If item of cat costumes, so I have a list here. And this list tells me for the 10th cat, so all these cats are 1 through 20, I think. And so each cat has a number in a list. If, the 12th cat is yellow, its number is going to be 1. If the 12th cat is green, its number is going to be 2. And so this is just going through so this list and counting how many 2s there are. And then it's changing the green count by 1 if it ever finds a green cat. And so it's all the cats. So this is going through this list and changing this number, which will be how many green cats there are. So that's the sequential approach. If I want to do it in parallel, I'm going to click on one of these cats. And so this is okay. So that's cat number 1. If I click on the code. The code says the following. If I click the cat, I switch the costume. So if the cat was yellow and I click it, it becomes green. If the cat was green and I click it, it becomes yellow. And when I press C, so, the C on the keyboard, it's basically sending this broadcasting, the green check, to all the cats. And so the cat, it's, when it's receiving this, it's saying if my costume is 2, so if I'm green, I will change this number. So what this is doing, so each cat has this code. When I press C, this is a sequential one, and there's a when I press the key, what it's doing is the idea is that each cat gets the function and counts its own, looks if it's green, if itself is green. If it's green, it's going to change that number. And so each cat does a computation on its own costume.
So, let's see. Let's make two cats.
So, I press C, and each cat, you know, this cat and this cat and this cat changed the green count by one each, and so it became three. So they perform this operation. All right, so that's the scratch code. This is the code for each cat. Notice how it's exactly the same. This is the sequential approach going over the list. And this is the parallel approach, basically broadcasting green check for all the cats. And so this kind of approach is called MapReduce. It's an algorithm, it's a method. And what it's doing is saying map is the function that I want each processor to do. So in the case, in a program with the cats, the map function is, am I green or am I not green? If I'm green, I'm going to change a count. If I'm not green, I'm going to not do anything. And so, and then reduce is, there needs to be some kind of, I am the boss, and I assign the task to the processors. And so the processors give me the answer. I need to process that answer. And so reduce is getting the result from all the cats, from all the processors, and then summarizing the results. And so in the case with your phone numbers, I had to tell you, please raise your hand if your phone number has two or more fives in it. And then I had to count them. And so I was doing the reduce by counting the results. And so this is showing how MapReduce works. So you know, you have the central server or the central computer. It figures out the map operation. It sends it to all the computers, basically sending a command. Each computer, this is the data that you have. Each computer has access to part of the data. And so this computer has access to this part of the data. This computer has access to this part of the data. Each computer applies map on each of the parts, on its own part. And so they make a computation, then they send the data back to the main server, and the main server basically applies reduce, which is, you know, kind of summarizing all the results together. And so this is used by MapReduce is used by Google, and it basically what it's doing when it's getting a query, It's giving the query to all the computers that it's working with. So say it's working with 100 processors, it will each processor will work on a part of the internet or part of the index, and so it's just sending the query to all these computers, and then it summarizes the results by using reduce. And so this is, I don't know if you know about Google Trends. Google has a web page where they show which topics are hot, like, you know, today, for example. So these are the results from today. It's basically looking at each query that you make, each query that it gets. It's looking for how popular was this yesterday, or how popular was this an hour ago, and how popular is it now. And if it's way more popular now than it was yesterday or an hour ago, it's going to put it in the on the list. And you have a top 100 or something, and I extracted the top 10. So these are the most popular searches. This was around 10 o'clock this morning. And you can see, so Boston Marathon, there's this huge marathon in Boston that is happening today. There's all kinds of, you know, famous people who wanted to run, and they can't fly from Europe because of the volcano. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that. I actually had to look all these up so I know what I'm talking about. I probably forgot some of them. I forgot what the second one was about. What's that?
15th anniversary of the city bombing.
Maybe. It was, okay, right. That was definitely one of the themes. Oh, this one, right. It's 15 years since the bombing. This is Discovery, was a space shuttle, and it was supposed to land today, but they said that weather wasn't good, and so it got postponed to tomorrow. Hopefully tomorrow the weather will be good. This is the Country Music Awards. today, about 2,000 or some crazy number like that. I think this is where President Obama will give his speech on May 9th. You probably all know what this is. So I'm showing, this is showing, when you click on it, it's showing how, you know, basically the growth, the pattern of popularity. And I think this is just some kind of index of how popular, you know, how popular it was, it's today, relatively to, you know, yesterday.
Is today like such a lame day that April 19th in history is like a popular surge?
Yes. No, you know what? I'm very happy about this because I was thinking I would teach this last week, and the surgery were horrible. Like, I was so embarrassed of talking about it. And so I'm really happy. I was looking at it today, and I was like, this is great. Go ahead.
Yeah, these are not the most popular searches today. These are the ones that have gained the most over yesterday.
Yes, yes, exactly. So the biggest differential, yeah. Yep.
Lucky to get such a clean
looking. I know, I'm very happy. This is a good day. Okay. And so basically, Google is looking for each, so to decide what the hot trends are, it's looking through 200 to 20 terabytes of data, which is a very big number, and it's making about 5 to 10 map reduce operations to get this, hot trends. And so, I don't know if you can wrap your brains around how much work it is to, first of all, to keep all these queries, updated. Second of all, to figure out what is more pop, like make all these differentials and make all these computations. And so this shows the power of parallel computers. Because, you know, they do have a lot of computers, but it's still just computers. And so, you know, it's not just having a lot of power, it's also using it wisely. And so they're very good at doing it. And so here's another problem that shows, you know, how you can do the parallel computer. So, you know, everyone think of a number. So let's say that your first digit in your phone number after the area code. Think about that. And then if you each tell me your number, I want to add all these numbers, okay? And so you each tell me your number, and I make a list of these numbers. And then I add up all the numbers. How long will that take me to compute? If you're N people, if a lot, what is that? Big O of N, exactly. So that's going to be big O of N, right? Okay. Now, we're going to do this live. All right. So here's what we're going to do. Everybody raise your hand. All right. And then you have to find another person with their hands raised and tell them, so two people pair up. And one person tells the other person their number, the other person adds up the number and remembers the numbers. And whoever remembers the numbers keeps their hand up, the other person puts their hand down.
How many digits?
Just one digit. Okay, so the first digit and your phone number after the area code. Okay, so I want everyone's hand to be up, please. Okay, thank you. And so find a person, another person, and tell them your digit, and one of you will keep their hand up. One of them will sum up the digit, will remember the sum, and keep your hand up, and the other person will put their hand down. So just once.
You're three.
I want to see half of the hands up. Okay, half of the hands. Just half of the hands now? Okay. Yeah? So we have the people, right? So if two people talked, this person remembered the sum, this person told this person the sum, and this person will keep their hand up. So there are two people, right? And this person told this person the number, or they exchanged numbers, and this person remembers the sum and keeps their hand up. And this other person puts their hand down. Okay, now you have to do that again. So find a person with their hand up, exchange a number, sum them up.
Yeah, sure.
That's what that slide says, but I should have read it, I guess. Okay, so quarter of the people have their hand up now, I guess.
She needs to find a partner.
Yeah, I have a partner.
Okay, do that again, please. So find a person with their hand up. You can yell, it doesn't matter. It's not a secret. Okay. Hands up. Do that again. Okay, do that again.
46.
Okay. We have four. We have four people. We have a power of two in the class, the number of people. I'm so excited. Okay. Okay, cool. We have a power of two plus one. All right. So we have four more people, you two, and you two.
Wait, who?
Eugene, I guess you and, what's your name?
Sarah.
Sarah.
Yeah, Sydney.
Okay. And you two?
93. I had 26.
Okay. 26 and 93? That's 119? Yeah. 119 and
83.
Okay, and do that again with him. So, okay, I don't want to get involved.
Who am I getting?
119 and
83. Yeah, I had 83.
207. Okay, so that's our sum. Okay, so we did this basically. So we are a power of two processors. I'm guessing 64 people, and We how long did it take? So let's figure out what. So on the first round, n hands are up, right? N however many people are in the class. On the second round, n over 2, right? We divided the number by 2. Because, you know, one person in each pair, one person kept their hand up and one person didn't. And we last round, one hand is up, right? How many rounds did we have? Log n, right? Every time it halves. So first we had 64 people. So after the first round we had 32. I guess second round we had 32. Third round we have 16, 8, 4, 2, and 1, 7, right?
How's it constant with the sprites if you can just like ask everybody their number and total.
Yeah, but you're still doing log of it. You're still adding.
So since the sprites interacted with the number of green outputs?
Right. What if you have a billion sprites? You still have to count how many. So it's still log it. I'm counting the number of operations that I'm doing. So I'm counting the number of rounds is basically, in this case, that's the only equivalent, you know, operation. Okay, so it's really good. So we saw, you know, if, I made a table once and I showed how, you know, if n grows, how log n stays. Log n is the number of digits in the number. And so if you have a 12 digit number, the log is just 12. So it's a very good improvement to, you know, Big O of log n is way better than big O of n. And so that's how things are done so fast and so well. This is another problem. I call it treasure hunt because it is a treasure hunt. So we start here, and we know this location. And on this location, there's a piece of paper that tells us the next location, the location of the next hint. We get to the next hint, the location of the next hint. The next hint tells us where the third hint is. And so on, and we keep following the hints, and we find the treasure at the end. And this looks like it really is a very step-by-step kind of operation. It looks like it would be very hard to break into parallel operations. And still, there's a way of breaking this into a lot between a lot of processors. So let's say that I made this little drawing, which will take. So yeah, so this is what you do. So you play the game. I guess kids play this game sometimes. And you find the treasure. So let's say that you have a processor here, 9. Processor 9 contains the address of the next processor that contains... So each processor tells us the next hint is in processor 23. And this processor says the next hint is in processor 13. And so on and so on, and we get to processor N, where our data, or, you know, the secret to life and happiness is in processor N, and we want to reach it. And so basically each processor, the only thing it knows is the address of the next processor. Where's the next hint? And so this looks like just a chain of processors. This looks like, you know, how can we break this into to make it faster? And so what we do is that each processor's sends his address to the previous processor. So because they're neighbors, now they're gonna know. Now each processor will know what's before and what's after it. And then what they do is each processor sends their next one. So 13 sends 76 is after me to 23. And so now each processor knows not only the next one, but the next two ones. Okay? And so they have this information now. And they basically don't need the second one. You know, because my goal is to get to processor N, where the information that I need is. And so now 9 knows that 23 comes after it, but also 13. And so it doesn't care about 23. It's going to get to 13. 13 is going to get to 27, and so on, to up to N. And so basically what we did is we have the number of processors in one round. And so this is, again, just for one round. We have, on the second step, we have N over 2 processors. We're going to have that, and so on. Last step, we're going to have 1 processor. So we did this very sequential operation in log N again, right? We have the number of processor each time, all right? Does that make sense? Any questions? Okay, so the you get this log N kind of feel from the parallel processing. And so what this is also, you know, going back to Google, you have billions of web pages, and you want to make, you want to search an index of billions of web pages in less than a second. And so you basically split the query along so you split the index and you split the query too. So each computer will work on a small part of the index, and they will all have performed the same search on that data. And so this is extremely parallel because you just have a whole list of, it's like the painting the fence. It's very, very much like that. It's very parallel. This is another really cool idea, and I'm going to show a video about it. They're getting, maybe I should let the guy explain it. So they're getting all this data from space, and they wanted to look for extraterrestrial life. And so they don't have enough computing power to, analyze all that data. And so they're asking people to download a screensaver, which, you know, when you don't work on your computer, it goes into screensaver mode. And what happens is that the SETI sends data from outer space to your computer. Your computer performs, looks for, you know, special signals and stuff, and then sends the data back to the SETI server. And so they're looking for ET, and they haven't found anything.
Radio telescope, a big antenna, is in Puerto Rico. You might have seen it in the James Bond movie GoldenEye, or in the movie Contact with Jodie Foster, Matthew McConaughey. Only in James Bond, it comes up out of the water. It doesn't really do that. It's 1,000 feet across in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. It holds 10 billion bowls of cornflakes. It's a big mirror. The radio waves bounce off that bowl and are reflected up to the receiver, where we have a receiver that's constantly all day long, all year round, looking for radio signals from other civilizations. The original kind of signals we look for are very simple kind of signals, just a strong signal at one frequency. We'd scan a lot of different frequencies, and we look for a strong signal coming up at one of the frequencies. Channel number 2,264,191. Here's some channel with a strong signal. That was the simplest kind of signal to look for, and then we wanted to branch out. We wanted to look for more interesting kinds of radio signals, and so we started looking for these drifting radio signals. These are examples of signals that are not constant in frequency. Can't feel very well. But then they drift in frequency. And so you can see those with your eye. You find these drifting signals with your eye. There's three of them there. But it's actually, we have about 100 million of these things to look at every second. So we need about 100 million eyeballs to do this. Well, what we've done instead is written a computer program to look for this stuff. We also look for pulsing signals, a bip, bip, bip. And that's actually hard to see with your eye, but here I've circled the pulses. And you can find these if you look long enough. Look for these regular pulses. And that we've trained the computers to do. So what we did is we need a huge amount of computing power to look for these signals. And that's why we asked the public, the volunteers all around the world, to help us analyze the data from the Arecibo telescope. And so what we did is we put together this screensaver program. It's a free program called the SETI at Home program. You download it from our website. You install it on your computer at the office or a school or at work or at home. And then when you install this program, it gets over the internet. It gets a little piece of data. So you'll get this part of the sky and you'll get this part of the sky. Everybody gets a different part of the sky to work on. And your computer works on that, looking for interesting signals in the spare time. It pops up like a screensaver when you go out for a cup of coffee. It starts grinding away on the data. And then after a few days, it'll send the results of that analysis back to our server in Berkeley. It'll send any strong signals that it found, any interesting candidates. And then you get a new piece of data, a new work unit from a different part of the sky. And you just keep doing that until you've found ET. Your name is attached to every piece of data that you send back. So any signals that you find, you might get the Nobel Prize. You have to share it with me, and you have to share it with a lot of people. There are about 5 million people that have signed up for SETI at Home. The Nobel Prize is about $1 million, so you get about 20 cents. You won't get rich, but you might get famous. There are about 1,000 or 2,000 people signing up every day. They donate about 1,000 years of computing time every day. All the volunteers who helped us, they built the biggest supercomputer on the planet, the largest computation that's ever been done.
How old is that?
That's a year old. I was guessing that if they had found anything, we would have known. We would have found out. And so I don't think they have found something yet. There's all kinds of video on YouTube people have found, like different people who have downloaded it, and but I don't think so. So it's crazy, right? So 5.2 million computers, which is more than what Google uses, and so that is actually the biggest parallel computer in the world, I think, right now. Even though we don't really know how many computers Google has, but I think they have less than that. All right. And so other good examples for parallel are computer graphics. So you get images, and you can assign 1 pixel per light ray or something like that. We have weather modeling. So the way they do weather is they assign kind of a cube. They divide the sky into cubes, and they figure out the pressure and the temperature of each cube. And when wind goes into the cube, it changes the pressure, and so they can figure out, you know, all these cubes interact, and they you know, each processor processes a cube. And then you can, you know, mailing out phone bills could be done because you have, you know, that can be done in parallel very, very well. So this is getting a little bit into just image processing a little bit, and then we're going to be done with this. So this was a program. It didn't really run on my computer, but we can just look at what it does. You have a pixel, you have one processor per pixel, and so you process each pixel. Your map function processes one pixel, and so you send that to all the processors that you have. And we know that, you know, the pixel, as we talked in the beginning, is made out of 3 bytes. One byte, the amount of red, one byte is the amount of green, and one byte is the amount of blue. And so each pixel is 24 bits. This color is made out of, you know, it has 161 out of 255 red, this amount of green, and this amount of blue. And so 255, 155, 155, I think, is white, and 000 is black. Can you tell me why 255? That looks like a random number. Yeah.
It's 0 to 256, or 0 to 255, so there's 256, you know, shades of blue, and that's base 10.
That's 8 bits, right? With 8 bits, we can make between 000 8 times and 111 8 times. Yeah, that's exactly true. Okay, and so if you want to make a rectangle that looks like this, you just say... So red out will be the pixel in the amount of red in the pixel in our output image. The green out will be the amount of green, and the blue out will be the amount of blue. And so we set red out to 161, green out to 129, and blue out to 226, which was the lavender, and we get this color. And so this is this program that we had 2 images, and we can combine images together. We can look at, you know, what is this pixel and what is this pixel, and make an average. And output average of those pixels. You can make all kinds of funny, weird things with that. So, for example, one, you know, if we want to output image one, for each pixel, we set red out to the amount of red in the first image, the amount of green with the green in the first image, and we send this to all the pixels in the image. And so each pixel would do that computation itself. If we want a blue, we just set the blue to 0. We just copy the red and the green. If we want to mix them up, we just set the, you know, how much red to how much blue there was. So the intensity, the results don't necessarily make sense, but you can play around that. If you want the grayscale, you just you can average, for example, the red, the green, and the blue, and then you set all of them to the same value. If the red, the green, and the blue are set to the same value, they're going to be gray. And so if this is high, it's going to be light gray. If this is low, it's going to be dark gray. If you want green only, you just do red and set red and blue to 0. There's all kinds of other things. If your blue is bigger than half of the intensity, then you set it to the highest intensity. You can do, you know, if the blue is bigger than the red, and so on. So all kinds of combinations they can do. It's fun to actually watch it work. So you can combine the images. You can set, if you want to output image 2, that's your image. You can take the average between, for each pixel, what's the red in the first image, what's the red in the second image, and average that out and make the red that value. And it's going to be a mix of the 2 images. You can do random. You do a random bit. If the bit is 0, you output the image 1. If the red is bit is 1, you're going to output image 2. If you randomize among all the bits, you're going to get some bits from image 1, some bits from image 2, from pixels from image 1, some pixels from image 2. And you can have a threshold. If the intensities are above a certain threshold, you can set them all to white, as you set them all to black. All right, and so that's like how you can do image processing. It's a very highly parallel process too. Any questions for parallel computers before we move on to program questions? No? All right. Okay, so this is the first question, and this is how it goes. Well, everybody change their frequencies. And this is how you have a Hanukkah lasts 9 nights. Each night, the first night you light 1 candle, the second night you light 2 candles, which are different. If you ever lit, you light 2 new candles. The third night you light 3 new candles, and so on. And so each night you will have how many candles will you need as a big O of something for N nights? So again, you're not using the same candle twice. If you use it, you're not going to use it again. You throw it away. Okay, so for two nights, you're going to use three candles. One night, one candle. The second night, two candles. So 1 + 2 = 3. Just clarify. Let's stop at 1:30. Unless anybody needs more time? Anybody have time? Oh. All right. Just yell. If you need more time, just let me know. How about 2? Getting ready to stop. Stopping in 2, 1. Finally.
Kind of.
Yeah. So C is the right answer, right? Because. Anyway. Why? Can somebody explain why the C is the right answer? No? Yeah.
It's an n squared minus 1 over 2, and that just reduces the n squared.
How'd you get that? N squared minus 1 over 2?
You showed us the box,
Okay. It's n squared plus 1, but yeah. N squared plus n, actually. All right, so if the reason is because it's 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus n, which is n times n plus 1 minus 1 over 2. So it is n plus 1. Okay, so this is n squared plus n over 2, which is big O n squared. All right, any questions? No? All right, so this is talking about, you have a list of integers, and how fast can you do the following operation if the list is sorted and if the list is unsorted. And the question is, does the smallest number in the list appear twice? So your options are, okay, A, unsorted, big O of log n, sorted, big O of 1, B, unsorted, big O of n squared, sorted, big O of n squared, C, unsorted, big O of n, sorted, big O of 1, D, unsorted, big O of log n, sorted, big O of n, E, unsorted, big O of 1, sorted, big O of log n. There's going to be a question like this in the final, too, and in the homework. So you know, you can practice it. Okay, I'm stopping at 2. Five more seconds. Stopping. It's because if the list is unsorted, I have to go over the whole list and keep the smallest number that I've seen so far and how many times I've seen it. And so, actually, what I can do is I go through the list once, I find the smallest number, and then I go through the list a second time to see if that number appears another time. And so I need to go through the list twice, 2 times n, which is big O of log n, big O of n. And if it's sorted, I just look at the first and the second number. If the smallest number shows up twice, it's going to be the first and the second number in the list. If the smallest number does not appear twice, it's going to be the first number. And the first number is the smallest in the list, so I'm going to be able to see if it shows up twice or not. Okay? Any questions? No? This one is the same kind of question. But the question is there a palindrome in the list? And so the palindrome is a number that you can read left to right and right to left is the same number. It's a symmetrical number. So how long does that take? How long does that take to answer on an unsorted list and on a sorted list? And the options are the same. Unsorted big O of log n, sorted big O of 1. Unsorted big O of n squared, sorted big O of n squared. Unsorted big O of n, sorted big O of 1. Unsorted big O of log n, sorted big O of n. Unsorted big O of 1, sorted big O of log n.
You're talking about if the individual...
Yes, if the individual... in it, it's not like the list is a palindrome. It's every number... Is this a palindrome or not? Is this a palindrome or not? Is this a palindrome or not? I have the wrong answers on this. Okay. So, just answer if it's unsorted. The answer for unsorted.
Yeah. I just realized.
Okay. Stopping at 1, 2, I guess. Again. Through the whole list and look for every single number. The fact that the list is sorted is not helping me. So for sorted and unsorted, it's going to be big O of N for both of them because I have to go over the whole list. Any questions? Okay. Now, which of these functions grows the fastest? A, big O of N, B, big O of log N, C, big O of n log n, D, big O of n squared, E, big O of n squared log n. So which number is biggest? If n is big, which one is going to be the biggest number? So again, log is how many digits are in the number. Log of n is... Yeah. Okay, getting ready to stop. In 5 seconds. Bigger than n squared, because I'm multiplying by something that is bigger than 1. If n is big, this is going to add some kind of, you know, if n is held 12 digits, it's going to be n squared, a huge number, times 12. All right? Any questions about that? What about the most slowly? Which one is going to grow the slowest? So I'm saying this again just because of how people have answered. Log n is just a number. Log n is how many digits are in the number. Which one of those is a smaller number? Pick any number. Stop at 1:30. The number of digits in a number is smaller than the actual number. So log n is smaller than n. Big O of log n is going to grow slower than big O of n. Okay? We said that if n is a million, log n is 6 or 7. If n is a billion, log n is 9, and so on. Okay, so it's way smaller. Log n is growing way slower than n. Yeah.
I'm confused why that's also halving the list every time.
Right.
Yeah, well, how is that?
Okay, so when you have a list every single time, what you do is so you're confused about the number of digits versus the number of bits, right? Log base 10, log base 2, right?
Just the fact that big O of log n is not only the amount of digits in a given number, but it's also a list being handled every time.
Right.
So I understand that.
Okay, so the number of times you can have a number before you get to 1 is the number of bits you need to represent that number. It's going from digits to bits. Okay, and it turns out between log base 2 of a number and log base 10 of a number, there's a constant. There's a formula that basically you can convert between logs. And no matter what the number is, if you have log base 2, is a constant away from log base 10. So, log base 2 of a number is a constant times log base 10 of that number. There's a constant difference. All the logs are the same, kind of. So when you get to big numbers, the logs, it takes about the same amount of digits as it takes the amount of bits. It's just a constant difference. And that constant stays the same. It's a little confusing, but it's kind of the same kind of big O. It's just, yeah. Yeah.
This is like sort of unrelated, but when you're looking at like the graphs, does log n decrease instead of increase?
Log n always increase. They all increase. It would be great if it would decrease.
Okay.
But because as the numbers grow bigger, the number of digits you need grows too. Right? It goes slower, but yeah. Maybe you can just remember that I'm kind of against memorizing things in this class, but having stuff, the number of times you need to have is log, the number of digits you need to represent a number is log. There are different bases of the log, but it's the difference between 2 to a power and 10 to that power. It's a big difference when the numbers are small, but it's small.
What part did you get on the calculator? You got log.
There's different. Ln is log base 10, and log base 2 is log. Yeah.
So those are different logs.
There's different.
What you're talking about, like the log with dividing by 2 each. time.
Yeah, that's a log.
It's different than the log for
how many digits? Yes. Yeah, but there's a constant difference between them. And so the big O notation swallows up that constant. And they're all logs.
Any other questions? What about this one? So what is express 4n squared log n plus 23n log n plus 45 in terms of the big O notation? Is that a big O of n? Is it a big O of a log n? Is it C, big O of n log n? Is it D, big O of n squared? Or is it E, big O of n squared log n? Stop at 1. Take everything else out. What is everything else? So what's the biggest one? N squared log n. Okay, yes. You say that too. So what we said was that that's where the questions about what's the biggest, you know, which one of these functions grows fastest, that's where they come in. You have to decide, okay, does n squared log, 4n squared log n grows faster than n log n, then 45, or which one? And so you take the biggest one, the one that grows the fastest, you ignore all the other ones, and then you ignore the constants, and that gives you n squared log n. Okay? This seems that people know. Have this one under control. Or are really good at guessing, which I don't think is true. Okay, so this is the last one, a Huffman code for current address. Address. How many bits do you need? Make sure you include the space. You have a space here, so you need to take that into account. How many bits do you need to encode current address? You need A, 45. You need B, 46. You need C, 47. You need D, 48. Or E, 49. Thank you.
Sure. Your drawing doesn't need to be pretty. It just needs to be give you the right code. Okay. How many people need more time? Okay. So on the exam, it's not so black and white. You know, you're going to get a chance to actually write down your tree, and, you know, if you mess something up, it's not going to be such a big deal. This is like black and white, right? If you don't get exactly the right answer, yeah.
Space count?
Yes, space counts as a character. Yep. All right. I think I'm going to stop, and we're going to do it. I'm going to do it on the board again. Hold on. All right, I'll hold on. Oh no, that doesn't sound good. I'm going to stop at 10. Yeah. Sometimes I write them very far apart from each other. So if I make up my mind, I can insert the...
How do you know that it should be, like, inserted?
Like, I put the smalls, like, the ones all together and close to the twos, because I know that I'm going to combine the one and the one, and it's going to make a two.
There's this sign.
Yeah, or that. Or, you know, you can just make a tree that looks very ugly. I like it very neat, but it's not always. Choose a random number. You know, you don't have to actually write the codes for this kind of question. You just get 1, 2, 3, 4 times 1. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4. You have 8 here. You have another 4, 12, 16, right?
Yeah.
16, then you have 1, 2, 3, 4 again. 16, 20.
So actually, yeah, I have an extra step.
All right, let's see. I'm going to stop this counter. Writing them to make the tree look pretty. So I write down basically all the letters with their frequencies underneath them. C has 1, U is 1, E is 2, N is 1, T is 1, B is 2, the space is 1, A, 1, R, 3. One thing that you all should have gotten is the code for R should be small, relatively small, and the codes for the smallest frequencies are bigger. Yeah. All right. So let's see. We always combine the two smallest frequencies. So we have a bunch of ones. It doesn't matter what order we do them in. I just combined C and U, 1 and 1, and I make it 2. Now I still have ones, so I combine N and T. Make it 2, and then I combine the space and the A, and so I got rid of all the ones. So now I have a bunch of twos that I can combine. I combine this 2 with this 2, and get a 4. Then I combined this 2 with this 2, and made another 4. I combined this 2 with this 2, and made another 4. And now I have a 3 and a whole bunch of 4s. So I'm combining, I'm choosing this 4 with this 3. I make 7. Now I have 2 4s that are my smallest frequencies. I combine these 2, make an 8. And then I combine the 8 and the 7. And make a 15. And I need to have 15. The check is having 15 different characters in my
words. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 different characters in my word. Okay? And so now what I do is to just answer how many bits. I know that the code for S will have 1, 2, 3 bits. They're going to be 0, 0, 0 in this case, but I'm going to skip that, and I'm just going to say, how many bits are there? There's 3 bits for S times 2. So 2 S's, each S needs 3 bits. That's the amount of bits that I need for all the S's in my word. For the C, I'm going to have 1, 2, 3, 4 bits. 1 times 4. For the U, I'm going to have 1, 2, 3, 4 bits. For the E, I will have 1, 2, 3 bits times 2. The N will have 4 bits times 1. The T will have 4 bits times 1. And the D will have 3 bits times 2 D's. I'm going to have 4 bits for S times 1 S, 4 bits for A times 1 A. And I have 2 bits for R, and there's 3 R's. And so I add all these numbers together. Now if I actually want to write down, so this is a 6 and a 4, this is a 10. I have a 4 and a 6, which is a 10. I have a 4 and a 6, which is another 10. Another 4 and a 6, which is going to give me another 10. So I have 40, 8.
Why don't we just add up each branch of the tree? They get the same.
Add each branch of the tree, like...
Every number up there equals 40.
What do you mean?
Like the 2, add the 2s at the 4s, 7, 8, 15, and you get 48. Not those 2s, those 2s.
These 2s?
Just add every number up there.
Well, that gives you 15.
Oh, I don't think it's connected.
Oh, it does? Okay.
I'm going to think about that.
Okay, and so if you wanted to get the bits, though.
We said that the code for each letter is starting at the root of the tree and following the left or the right branch, calling the left branch a 0, the right branch a 1, and reaching that letter. And so I'm gonna label all these branches. The left branches will be zeros. The right branches will be ones. And then I'm gonna write down the codes for each of these. So the codes for space will be 1010. And this is where you don't have to get the same codes as me. I mean, you can definitely get different codes, but the number of bits will be the same. So the code for space is 101. The code for S, again, I start at the root, and I'm looking for S. So it's 000. The code for C is going to be 0010. The code for U will be 0011. Code for R is going to be, where is R? Here. 11. The code for E is 010. The code for N is 0110. T will be 0111. A is 1011. The code for D is 100. And so notice how R is the most frequent letter. It has a small code, 2-bit code, and the letters that have frequency 1 have 4 bits, and the letters that have frequency 2 have 3 bits. And so that's the encoding, and you can replace C with its code. It's going to be, 00110, then the code for U, then the code for R, and that's how you encode your word. Any questions? No? Everybody's an expert in this topic? Okay.